ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 18 Text 72, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON. Krito me saptadha garbha Asam sapta kumarakaha Tepi chai kai kasho vrikna Saptadhana pimammire. Translation. First I cut the child in the womb into seven pieces, which became seven children. Then I cut each of the children into seven pieces again. By the grace of the Supreme Lord, however, none of them died. Who's speaking?
Indra.
Indra to Diti. Text 73. Tatastat paramascharyam viksha vyavasitam maya mahapurusha pujaya siddhi kapyanu sangini. My dear mother, when I saw that all 49 sons were alive, I was certainly struck with wonder. I decided that this was a secondary result of your having regularly executed devotional service in worship of Lord Vishnu. Purport. For one who engages in worshipping Lord Vishnu, nothing is very wonderful. This is a fact. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partho Dhanadharaha, Tratra Shrir Vijaya Bhutir, Dhuvani Tir Matir Mama. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. Yogeshwara is the supreme personality of Godhead, the master of all mystic yoga, who can do anything and everything he likes. This is the omnipotence of the Supreme Lord. For one who pleases the Supreme Lord, no achievement is wonderful. Everything is possible for him. Throughout the Vedic literature, there are stories of incidents which appear to be impossible according to our regular sensory perception, according to all that we have seen and heard. There are many such stories, such as the one that's being told now, of Indra cutting the embryo in the womb of Diti into 49 pieces. And instead of abortion taking place, the embryo became 49 sons of Diti. So there are many such narrations, and people who rely upon their sensory perception to give them knowledge, they reject such narrations as being simply foolish stories. The Vedic literature is not taken very seriously by most scholars of the modern age, at least what in the sense of the material world is passing as scholars. They don't want to speak of taking it seriously. They don't even begin to admit that there can be anything of any interest for them to learn there. Of course, there are scholars who study the Vedic literatures, but they also, most of the mundane scholars, they simply take it as some stories, just like there was that book by Stephen Rosen interviewing some rascal about the Ramayana, and he said that the rascal scholar said, oh yes, when we get into the Aranyakanda, then we find so many things like out of a Walt Disney movie, hobgoblins and rakshasas and so many different things. So unfortunately, our Mr. Rosen agreed with him. But this is the general stance taken by mundane scholars, that it's just some story, it can't be true. How can there possibly be such a thing? It's just a story meant to entertain ignorant people, and ignorant people take it seriously. That's what they consider. They consider that what they see, that is called pratyaksha, what we can see, what we can perceive through our senses, that is acceptable as knowledge and not anything else. Of course, modern science, many of the things they say, what they call science, many of the things they say, they can't prove it, you can't see it. And even many of the things they say don't appear to make any sense at all. Just like, here the word is used, Mahapurush, meaning Lord Vishnu. But the Mahapurushas of the modern age are the mundane scientists, and the greatest of the mundane scientists of the present day is this Stephen Hawking, who is, he's on the cover of Newsweek magazine some 2 years ago. They had a picture of him, and the caption was given, Master of the Universe, because he's supposed to be explaining how the universe is going on. Of course, he can't walk or talk even. He only has two fingers which work, and he types things into his computer, and the computerized voice comes out, but they're calling him Master of the Universe. So anyway, his theory, he was very concerned that the Big Bang Theory gave the idea that the universe has a beginning, therefore maybe it was created by God. So he came up with a different theory in which, for his theory to be correct, time and space are the same. Can you just try and imagine what that means? No, you can't, because it doesn't make any sense. To substantiate his theory, he brings in his theory of imaginary time. There is a factor called imaginary time, in which he imagines that in imaginary time certain things happen, but it couldn't actually happen, so therefore you bring in imaginary time. So many different things. So many theories are there. There are more than 100 theories of the origin or the beginnings or how this universe goes on by scientists, which means that actually they don't know what they're talking about. If you say there are 100 different theories, what it means is that none of them knows what they're talking about. And actually, some other scientists, this came out about 2 years ago, they gave a report in Nature magazine, prestigious British science magazine, that the best of these theories has 1 in 10,000 chance of being true. And that was the best of them, of the 100 or so theories. So what it means is that they don't know what they're talking about, very plainly put. But they will say, we are trying. And they will have so many different theories. Just like when Newton had his theories, they thought, classical physics, this is the be-all and end-all. Beyond this, there is nothing to be known, as Krishna says in the Gita. They were thinking that beyond this, there is nothing to be known. But then they threw, Newton's in the dustbin now. He has no standing. So classical physics is thrown out, and now they have relativity theory, quantum theory, which don't agree with each other. And at least they agree that Newton's in the dustbin. So anyway, they have their present theories, which no doubt in course of time will also be thrown out, and they'll bring some more advanced theories, and they'll go on theorizing, but they never actually understand what is the fact. And for all their theories, Nobel Prizes, any devotee, he may not be very educated, but if he simply reads in Bhagavad Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhava, matas sarvam pravartate, Krishna says, from me everything comes. And if he accepts it, sarvametadritang manye yanmang vadasi keshava, just like Arjuna accepted it. If he simply accepts it, that Krishna is the source of everything, then immediately he becomes a greater scientist than all the scientists, all the Nobel Prize winners. Immediately becomes, just by accepting that. Now we may say, how is it that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya Das sitting here, or anyone else like him, who doesn't have PhD in physics, and probably doesn't have a PhD in anything, then how is he a greater scientist than Stephen Hawking, who's world famous, who's sought after by all the scientists of the world? Why? Because he simply accepts Krishna is the source of everything. Now he may not be able to explain in detail. Of course, if you study Srimad Bhagavatam, you can get some idea how the manifestation is going on. But he may not be able to give so many mathematical theories, but he simply accepts. So he's right, because actually Krishna is the source of everything. And even if you have big, big scientific theories, but the conclusion is wrong, then you're wrong. You may be wrong with big, big books giving big, big theories in very complex language that no one can understand. Just like it said, that who can understand Einstein's relativity theory? Einstein and maybe two or three others can understand it. So you may not, they may be able to talk big, big words which you can't understand, but they're wrong. If they don't accept at Krishna. That's their whole point. That they want to, they make these big, big theories just to avoid that there is any God. As one scientist wrote, he said that the scientists who don't believe in God, they seem to think about Him a lot more than the clergy. They're always talking about Him, because they're always... And then someone else was observing this, Stephen Hawking, his theory, he seemed to be more relieved that he had made a theory, not just this theory of the origin, not the non-origin of the universe, because he seemed to be more relieved that he had done that more from scientific, less from a scientific reason, than at last he can again give some reason in which there doesn't have to be a God. He was more concerned to postulate a theory in which God doesn't, there's no possibility of God coming in there. So this is their mentality. They simply want to deny Krishna. And they will deny Krishna. And Krishna will go on, and they will go on in the cycle of birth and death. They won't believe this. They won't believe the descriptions in Srimad Bhagavatam. Just like in the Bhagavatam, there are so many descriptions. One of the descriptions is that Lord Shiva is sitting under a banyan tree in Kailash, and that banyan tree is 8 million miles high and 8 million miles wide. So we can ask the scientists, do you believe this? No. We didn't see it. We have our telescope and we look through our telescope and we didn't see it. So we are very happy. Actually, I feel very happy when I read these descriptions. That this is knowledge that you're never going to see. You're never going to see Lord Shiva sitting under a banyan tree, however much you look through your telescope, because He's not going to show Himself to you. And even if you think you've gone to the moon, even if you didn't go to the moon, even if you went somewhere, you can't see what's there, because you're not fit to see. But Krishna will give you the intelligence. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matasmriti gyanam apohanam cha. Krishna is in your heart, and if you want to forget Him, He'll give you the intelligence by which you can forget Him forever, and you can make big, big theories. And it sounds very convincing to those who want to be convinced in such a way. They won't accept. Banyan tree, 8 million, or what else is there? There are eagles who fly from planet to planet and lay eggs in between, and the eagle babies, they hatch, eaglets, they hatch in between the different planets. And these eagles, they pick up huge elephants, much bigger than the elephants we see on this planet, and they eat them for breakfast. So who will believe such stories? We're accepting. Why do we accept? Because we accept that whatever I can see, who am I? Why should I accept simply what I see with my eyes? What can I see with my eyes? Why should I? I'm a tiny little being on a tiny little planet, in a tiny little universe. This is the smallest universe of all. And here I am sitting and I'm postulating what is the beginning of the universe by mathematical theory. You can never understand. It's not possible. You cannot understand something which took place such a long time ago. You cannot understand it simply by looking through your telescope and trying to understand. It's not possible. The first qualification to get knowledge, what is the first qualification to get knowledge? Is to give up thinking that we can understand simply by our own brain power. Jnane prayasam utapasya namanta eva. When we simply become a little humble and understand that I can't understand by looking through my telescope and making mathematical theories, then we can begin to understand if we go on to the next stage, which is Chivanti Sanmukharitam Bhavadiyavaritam. We simply hear from those who know. And actually, if we accept it as a hypothesis that there is God, then it's a very good hypothesis. You take all the scientific data that you've seen, you look through your telescopes, you see so many different things, and take this as a hypothesis, that there is a supremely intelligent, powerful being who designed everything and who maintains everything, then you find that all the data will fit. But they're so much insistent to find other... There are other theories, there are always problems. They say there's this problem with this theory, that theory. There's this... In other words, they can't get all the data, they can't get everything that they've observed to fit into one theory. They're trying to find the theory of everything, which combines everything in the universe. They want to explain everything in the universe by one mathematical theory, but they won't find it. Because The theory of everything is Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. Krishna is everything. Matasa Vampravatate. What is that other verse? Sutra Imanagana Iva. Everything rests upon Krishna. He is the one theory. Not theory, he's a fact. Their theories are theories, and Krishna is a fact. So they have their theories, and they want to try to fit everything in. But unless the first qualification for understanding God is that he has achintya shakti, inconceivable powers. And unless you accept that, it's not possible to understand God. So not only are our mundane scientists not accepting it, but they are deliberately denying it. Then how can they understand everything? You can't understand everything unless you understand what is the source of everything, what is the underlying principle of everything. That is Krishna. So they can't understand. Krishna will give them the intelligence to go on making different theories and postulating different ideas. And then again, someone will bring one theory. It looks very good. Then someone comes up with some other theory, and that looks better. So they throw out the old one, and they won't come to the proper conclusion, which is Krishna, because Krishna is the supreme transcendental autocrat, and he refuses to allow himself to be revealed to those who don't become humble, those who think we will understand the mind of God by our mathematical calculations. They won't ever be able to do it. Simply, they will grasp in the darkness of their ignorance and think we are making more and more progress in understanding. But those who are devotees, they see so much evidence of the existence of God. Just the fact that everything in the universe is integrated together, just the fact that spring, summer, autumn, winter, in India you have six seasons, just the fact the sun is rising every day, how is it going on? How is this sun which has ashesha teja, unlimited power, how is it that it doesn't destroy the whole universe, but rather it benefits the whole universe by staying yasyagya brahmati sangvrita kala chakra? How is it going exactly in its orbit without deviating even a little? If the planetary systems and the sun just deviated a little from their present orbits, if it was closer towards this, if the sun and the earth came slightly closer together, then we'd have global warming effect. Everything would be crisped, burned up. And if there was a movement of the sun and the earth, even slightly, they would go further away, then again, everything frozen. Like life cannot exist. Even tiny fraction of a degree, if the earth moved out of its orbit or the sun shifted its course, then life as we know it, as the scientists say, would cease to exist on this planet. But it doesn't. So how is that? Yasyagya brahmati samvrita kala chakra. The sun, who has ashesha teja, unlimited power, stays in his orbit under the order of Govinda. Not by chance. Not by chance that the whole universe is going on. There's so much evidence. What to speak of the mighty sun? What to speak even how we're digesting our food? Who can explain how such a system, even what we take as an ordinary thing, who can explain how such a system is there? That we eat, the food is digested, it is compartmentalized, some becomes blood, some becomes semen, some becomes urine, some becomes stool, some becomes muscle. How such a system came into being, how it's going on, we don't even think about it. We simply eat something and next day pass it out. But we don't consider, how is this wonderful system going on? Those who are theists, they understand. This is all going on by the design of Krishna. God has designed it. And those who are atheists, they will talk so many big words about how it has come into being by evolution. But how? How can such a complex thing come into being? This is common sense. You don't need a science degree to understand. What they're talking about, it's laughable. No doubt in future, people will, just like now we laugh when we hear about alchemists, some of the ideas that are... Previously, the scientific knowledge people had, they thought the world was flat. This Christopher Columbus, he had great difficulty getting his crew members to go on sailing west because they were afraid that they would sail over the edge of the world, they'd fall off the edge. So when we hear about it, we laugh because we know you're not going to fall off the edge because there isn't an edge. The world is round. They were saying the earth is flat. Of course, we know that Vedic knowledge knows that the planets... They are called loka, which means a ball. That we know. But they didn't know. When we hear about it now, we laugh. So in future, people are going to laugh at how did these people think that man has descended from monkeys? What a funny joke. How did they think that there is no God, simply everything has come by chance? What a ridiculous idea. People will laugh. We are laughing. Now we are laughing. Prabhupada, on his walks, he would laugh. The chicken is a better scientist than you. You'd make a joke, because you're saying you will produce life in future. And the chicken is simply clucking in and producing one egg with a living fertilized egg as the living chicken inside. So the chicken is producing life every day. So the chicken is a better scientist than you. Give the PhD Nobel Prize to the chicken. So we are laughing. And non-devotees, they become upset. That why are you speaking against our esteemed scientists who are doing so much good to human society? They're producing so many wonderful things, like atom bombs and air pollution and water pollution and food pollution and everything pollution. Anyway, they're great scientists and they're trying their best. So why should you blaspheme them? Sadhu ninda, the first offense against the scientists. Why should you blaspheme? So anyway, we are laughing and we're hoping for that day. Hoping means we have to work for that time when people will come to understand that the pronouncements of the scientists, they're not to be accepted. Just like we say gospel truth, Bible truth. So nowadays people accept the scientists have said, oh, the scientists have said. So scientists have said. Therefore they take it as a fact. Of course, now in the Western countries, mostly people, still, because they teach like that in the schools, it's very difficult for people to give it up, that way of thinking. But still, many, many people, they're disgusted with these scientists. And now if we tell people like that in India, or even in Eastern Europe, they're surprised. Why? How can they be disgusted? They're surprised to hear. Because they're still in a mindset, many years in the past. But actually it's a fact that many people, they don't believe. If the scientist says it, they're not inclined to believe it. And even if we tell them straightforwardly, so many things that a so-called scientist wouldn't be prepared to accept it, that there is a spiritual world, that God is blue, and we can tell so many different things. And many people, they're ready to accept it, because they, intuitively or whatever reason, they accept that, yes, there must be something beyond simply what these mundane scientists teach us, that life is simply meant for eating, sleeping, mating and defending. There's so much interest in what is otherworldly, just like this UFOs and so many different things, which ordinary scientists, straightforward scientists, they don't accept. But many people, they accept, yes, there are many things. Maybe the government or the teachers, they're suppressing this information from us. So there are many people who are prepared to accept a different kind of knowledge, and the number of people is increasing more and more. So it's wonderful. Actually, we find by the distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books and the preaching of this Hare Krishna movement, that the preaching field is becoming better and better and better. More and more people all over the world are prepared to accept Krishna consciousness. And even more and more people, generally we think that less intelligent people, they might be attracted to this. But we find that more and more people from well-educated background, they're accepting Krishna, they're ready to accept Krishna consciousness. These books are having their effect, that even people who are from a well-educated in the modern age doesn't mean that they are Sarvabhauma, they are Sanskrit scholars. But it means that they are well-educated in atheism. This is the meaning of well-educated in the modern age. But even people from such a background, more and more we find that they're prepared to accept Krishna consciousness, because actually it makes sense. And that we find that many, many, many of our devotees, when they came to Krishna consciousness, why did they become so much convinced that they're prepared to sacrifice their life and preach Krishna consciousness all over the world, giving up different comforts of material life? Because they were convinced. Not simply taking it as a sentiment, but because they were convinced intellectually that, yes, everything that is in Prabhupada's books, it makes sense. So that even when you come across a statement, there's a banyan tree 8 million miles high and 8 million miles wide, then you're prepared to accept, yes, why not? If God is actually God, then it's not that He has to be within the within our mental purview, that not simply what we can understand is what God can do. If God cannot, if we say that we cannot accept such things, that means we're limiting God. If you think God is great, how much great? This great, this great? No. There's no limit to how great God is. And even in this material world, what He can do, what He can create, there's no limit to that. Just like we see this Brahma. He thought he could understand Krishna. But then he saw, no, I can't understand Krishna. What is that verse? Jananta eva janantu kimba huktam chamukambo. Vapasho manasa. Yes, I don't have any brain. I'm not a big scientist. I can't remember the shloka. Anyway, the purport of it is that others may say, I know Krishna, I can understand. But Brahma, who is the biggest brain in this universe, he says, I don't, you may say, I understand Krishna, but I don't understand. He's Krishna is too wonderful. As Krishna himself says, that mamati jongsa sambhavam. This universe is created and maintained by me with just a fraction of my energy. So what is impossible for Krishna to do? Nothing is impossible. If we simply accept this, if God is actually God, then He can do everything, and He will do everything. Whatever He likes, He can do. He can bring the dead son of His teacher back. He can lift Govardhan Hill. What is the problem for Him to lift? He's holding all the planets just by His one expansion. Yes, yaika nishvasita kala matavalam jivanti loma vila jagadandanata Vishnur mahansyaha yasya kala vishesho govindamadi purushantam aham rajam. One expansion of Krishna, expansion of expansion of expansion, from Him all the universes come in seed form. When a devotee hears this, he thinks, very nice. When a non-devotee hears this, he thinks, this is not possible. So that is the difference between devotee and non-devotee. Any extraordinary thing. What is extraordinary? There's nothing extraordinary. Krishna can do everything. There's nothing impossible for Him. So that even here we see Diti, her womb was cut 7 times and again 7 times. But because she was protected by Krishna, Rake Krishna Mareke, Mare Krishna Rakeke, she was protected by Krishna. Therefore even the mighty Indra could not destroy the embryo in her womb. So what to speak of Krishna? Even His devotees can do wonderful things. Just like Prabhupada, he was asked once, someone asked him, that Swamiji, what miracles do you do? Because generally it is thought that a guru or a sannyasi or a swami, he can do some miracles. Should at least be able to do something. At least give some dust. Better give some fruit or a gold watch. Should be able to do something. The Prabhupada showed his Western disciples, these are my miracles. There is miracle. That the Western devotees, they became, the Western people became devotees of Krishna. That's not possible. As even when our devotees first came here, people were telling us, you cannot be a Hindu. It's not possible. Even when they saw, actually of course it's true, we don't want to be Hindus. We want to be devotees of Krishna. But they were thinking, you cannot do this, not possible. You go back to your country, don't wear this cloth, they used to say. But now they see that what is not possible, no one could have dreamed 30 years ago that here in Vrindavan there would be devotees of Krishna from all over the world. No one, if you would have told, they would have said impossible. But how is it possible? By Krishna's mercy manifested through Srila Prabhupada. Krishna Kripa Sri Murti. His divine grace. That's what it means. Divine grace. Otherwise it's not possible to make devotees from the Western countries. So here we see Diti, she had special mercy because she executed devotional service. Krishna has unlimited powers. So he can do whatever he likes. He can work through his devotees also. Just like once some disciples of Prabhupada, they told Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, some of your godbrothers were saying that you shouldn't preach in the Western countries. Because if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to preach in the Western countries, he would have done it himself, but he didn't. So why are you doing it? So Prabhupada said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't preach in the Western world because he wanted to give the credit to me. Prabhupada taught, that is the reason. So, what Krishna can do himself, he does through his devotees. We may think, well, the whole world is in a horrible condition. Sometimes people ask us, why doesn't Krishna come? Because he says in Gita that yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sujami aham. Whenever there is a decline in religious principles and an uprising of non-religion, Krishna says, at that time I come. So people say, sometimes people ask us, why doesn't Krishna come now? Krishna is here. Kali kale nam rupe Krishna avatar nam hoite hoi sarva jagata nishtha. Krishna has come in this Kali Yuga in the form of his holy name, which is non different from him. And by this holy name, all the world can be delivered. So Prabhupada, he told that this ISKCON movement, which is based on the chanting of the holy names, this is also non-different from Krishna. This Hare Krishna movement, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is non-different from Krishna. So Krishna is in this world in the form of ISKCON. He's here in this world in the form of his holy name. He's in this world in the form of the deity. So many ways he's present in this world. He's here in the form of the transcendental books of Srila Prabhupada, which are being distributed all over the world. So Krishna is present and he wants to do wonderful things. In Kali Yuga, that anyone, this Kali Yuga means the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, sinful age. In Kali Yuga, if anyone can take to Krishna consciousness, that is a wonderful thing. So we are seeing wonderful leelas of Krishna being enacted all over the world every day. As people take Prabhupada's books and their life changes, and people who were atheists or against Krishna consciousness or not interested in Krishna consciousness or highly sinful, they take Prabhupada's books and their life changes. They become devotees of Krishna. So this is again proof. The devotee, the non-devotee, he sees proof that there is no God everywhere. Just like this rascal Freud, he said that the idea of God is childish. That is for foolish people who don't have confidence in themselves. They like to rely on a God. So he's for Freud, everything that he saw spoke to him proof that there is no God. But for a devotee, he sees everywhere there is proof of God, and especially how people's lives change and they take up chanting Hare Krishna. The devotee sees it all over the world. There's so much preaching of this Hare Krishna movement going on. Anandam buddhi vardhanam is not simply a theory, but we're experiencing how the Sankirtan ocean of nectar is ever increasing as more and more and more people all over the world take Prabhupada's books, take to Krishna consciousness, start chanting, start taking Krishna consciousness seriously, and themselves become preachers. These are wonderful things. We are living in a wonderful time, the time when the flood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is gradually expanding, and not so gradually, it's expanding and expanding all over the world, and we can see the future of the Hare Krishna movement. Wonderful future. How more and more and more people all over the world are taking to this Krishna consciousness and can only expand because that is the nature of the spiritual energy. Anandam buddhi vardhanam. It will continue to increase. So of course the increasing of the Hare Krishna movement, that brings certain problems. Just like there's not enough people to preach to all the people who are interested. Just like we see here in India now, wherever we go, we meet people. They're happy to meet us. They like, oh, I've seen your temple in Vrindavan. Very nice. There's literally hundreds and thousands of people, millions of people in this country alone, who just with some association from devotees, they can take up Krishna consciousness gradually. They can take it up seriously. And all over the world, there are people interested. Even recently, thanks to some nasty border guards in Russia, they wouldn't let us through the border. So we had to drive to another border. So we're going through the country roads and stopping in different villages and asking the way, and we found in all the villages they knew Hare Krishna. There's in remote villages. And here we are dressed, what's this dress? Hare Krishna. Oh, Hare Krishna. They all know Even in remote places, people know Hare Krishna. Not only know, but they like it. And not only do they like it, but they have Prabhupada's books. Is this not amazing? Is this not proof of the potency of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So wonderful things are happening. It's not only that we read in Srimad Bhagavatam some wonderful things. Diti's embryo split into 49 and children came out, all alive, 49. But wonderful things for those who are in the fire of Sankirtan, those who are swimming in the Sankirtan ocean, they see wonderful things every day. How anyone takes, even this is a wonderful thing, in the Western countries, how anyone will spend their hard-earned money to buy a book about Krishna. That's a wonderful thing. This book, it's teaching no illicit sex, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication. And people are buying it. And not only one or two, but every day, thousands of these books are being distributed. That is wonderful. That is proof of the potency of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So for those who have the eyes to see, they can see. There is God, and He's here today. He's here in this Hare Krishna movement. And wonderful, He's exhibiting His wonderful potency. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Is there any question? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.